on the wimples puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time to uncover some of those mysteries of Manitoba, abandoned Manitoba, and our expert local historian Gordon Goldsborough joins me now from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadia.
So remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, last week I said that we were going to look at a mysterious concrete pillar that stands all by itself in the center of the Assiniboine River, about 3 miles downstream of Brandon.
So how did you come across this mysterious pillar?
Well, somebody told me about it, okay. And I was perplexed myself, yeah. So I had to go and check it out. So about a week or so ago, I went out and had a look, and sure enough, there in the middle of the river is this absolutely massive. I mean, I can't get a sense of just how big it is because it was out in the middle of the river, and
yeah,
of course
right.
I'd have to swim out to it.
But you didn't swim?
No.
Where's the commitment, Gordon? Where is the commitment?
But it's huge. I mean, it stands at least 10 feet out of the water.
Right.
It's at least 20 feet wide, 20 feet on either side. I mean, it's just this horking huge piece of concrete sticking out of the middle.
So when you see something like this, right, you're like, there's something interesting. What's your next step? Where do you
That's
Google
it.
Mysterious pillar in the river? What's your process?
Well, in this case, it was really not anything I could Google because there wasn't really anything that
right.
said what it could be. I mean, you just can't put mysterious concrete pillar.
No, you can't.
You know, that's the sort of thing that doesn't show up on
right.
a Google search. But there were clues on the site.
Okay.
So on the shores of the river, near where that big pillar in the middle was, there was also great big concrete chunks on either bank. And if you stood on one side, you could line them up. They were actually in a perfect row. And I thought, okay, that's the clue that they were all in a row. In
yeah.
fact, if you looked on the other side of the river from where I was, you could see that there was heading off in the direction a straight line. I thought, okay, we know now it was something to do with a railway.
Okay, yes. Right. Makes sense.
Yeah, because they're all lined up.
Yeah.
So I did a little research. I checked with a few friends from Brandon, and they said, we think that's probably the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway Bridge that was built back in the early 20th century. Now, we're not quite sure when.
Okay.
The records seem to be pretty sketchy, but it's certainly very early, maybe 1905, 1910. What we do know, though, is that the bridge was never completed.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, it was part of a time when in Manitoba's history, I think, that we might call the, sort of the Wild West of railway construction, you know, because the companies that were coming in, when we first had a railway in Manitoba, the Canadian Pacific, there was a rule that says you couldn't have any other railway but the CPR, but the government relaxed that rule, and as a result, you ended up with a whole bunch of companies coming into Manitoba building railways that were of dubious necessity.
Mm.
You know, we just didn't need all those railways. And I think the railways themselves began to realize, and so they began to abandon some of them almost before they were built. So in this particular case, the Grand Trunk Pacific was going to build a branch line from Brandon to the community of Justice, which is northeast of Brandon, just a little ways out of town. And so in order to get there, they had to cross the Assiniboine River. So they went ahead, they built the right-of-way. And
mm-hmm.
that's why, for example, today, if you ever had the reason to drive in the Brandon Sewage Treatment Plant, the road you'd be driving in on, if you knew, was actually the old railway right-of-way for this particular line.
Okay.
It was never a railway because they never put the rails down, but they had the whole right-of-way graded. It was ready for the rails. That was the, you know, just ready for anything to happen.
Such a waste of money.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, they did recycle some of it. So they built these concrete structures for the bridge itself, the pier in the center of the river, these abutments on either bank. But they also apparently put the actual concrete, the steel span across them. It was what we could call a steel truss bridge. If people are familiar, for example, with the Arlington Bridge here in
mm-hmm.
Winnipeg, the Redwood Bridge, these steel trusses, that's what they would have had across these concrete structures. Well, they realized they weren't going to ever use them. So they actually, because they had put those part in, the bridge part was
nice.
There. So they recycled those. And I don't know where they ended up. They're probably somewhere out there in the landscape, the old bridge off over the Assiniboine. But the concrete, of course, couldn't be used.
Stayed there.
Just left it behind. And so here it is over 100 years later, this reminder of this period in Manitoba's history when railway lines were being abandoned.
Mm.
And so there's our story for today, the story of railway abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
because it's a story that still plays out today. And I would argue that of all the stories we've talked about in this series, this is the one that is perhaps the most devastating in its effect on Manitoba communities, because all over, particularly the southern part of the province, even the northern part of the province, I suppose, railway lines and the loss of those railway lines has been basically the loss of the lifeblood to many communities around the province.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in 1933, the rules began to change, because up until that time, it was, say, the Wild West, and railways could build a line wherever they wanted to. They could remove it whenever they wanted to. But in 1933, the federal government, I think, decided that there was need for some kind of rules that could say, you know, no, that railway line has to be maintained for one reason or another. So they introduced an amendment to the Railway Act that required the railway to justify the reasons for abandoning a line. They would have to go before a board of commissioners, and they would decide if, in fact, anything could happen. But then there was not much happening from the 30s through the 40s. We started to see the beginnings of abandonment in the 60s. Okay. 1960, 61, 62, a whole bunch of lines around Manitoba started to be abandoned. And I think that's what really engaged the federal government. They began to realize that if they let this go unchecked, there might be an awful lot of railway lines abandoned. So they actually put a moratorium on further abandonment. So what you saw then is that from that first little beginnings in the 60s, that was pretty much it. And through the late 60s, the early 70s, there was no further lines abandoned.
So what was happening in the early 60s that caused this kind of sweeping abandonment?
Well, it was basically the road network.
Okay.
You know, because, of course, you have alternatives to railway. Railway is one of the most efficient ways to transport things, but, of course, it isn't always the most convenient.
Mm.
You know, you have to go when the train is going. And sometimes if there isn't a train going, well, you just have to wait. Well, of course, when you've got your own vehicle, when you've got a truck or a car, you can go whenever you want. So the convenience, I think, was what really made it attractive to take other means than the railway. And so you started seeing a lot of lines simply not being economically viable. And of course, railways are companies. They have to justify the bottom line. And so when there was these lines that just weren't paying for themselves, they said, okay, we're going to abandon them. And so quite a number of lines. Of course, some listeners may recall the trains up to Victoria Beach, that the people would take the train up to Victoria Beach to spend the day or the weekend or whatever at the beach. Well, that was one of the ones that went out in the early 1960s. In 1963, they took out that Victoria Beach line. But say, from the late 60s into the early 70s, then not much further happened because of the federal government's actions. But what the government did do, they decided to look at all the railway network and to see if they could make some sort of decisions about what we needed to keep and what we, you know, could get rid of. And so they categorized all the railway lines into one of three groups. The first group, what they called Group A, was what the basic network. And that was the one that they felt was the most essential for maintaining.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one that they were going to guarantee then until the year 2000. Now, that was in mid-70s.
Yeah.
So that was like 25 years into the future. That was as far as anyone could possibly predict. The other group was Group C, and those are the ones that they thought, well, you know, there's really no necessity for this at all. It could be abandoned immediately, and in fact, the railways went ahead and did abandon quite a few of those. The one that was the most, problematic was Group B, and those were the ones, there was over 6,000 miles in this second group. Those are the ones that they thought they needed to have some further discussion about, so they said, we're going to maintain them for a year, but we're going to start discussing what needs to be done with these ones. So they appointed a commission of inquiry. They put in charge of this commission a recently retired Supreme Court judge by the name of Emmett Hall. And in fact, the commission came to be called the Hall Commission.
Okay.
And even today, people may have recollections of the Hall Commission. They went all over Canada, basically hearing people. They listened to the railway companies. They listened to the grain companies, because, of course, a lot of these railway lines were used for transporting grain from farmers all over the western part of Canada. They listened, of course, to the people in the communities that would be affected by these railway lines. And they asked them, you know, what would you suggest happens to these various lines? Well, predictably, you could probably say, you know, what's going to be the result? The railway company said, well, we want to abandon all those Group B lines. They're basically not economically viable. We would have to spend lots of money to fix them up. We wanted to abandon all of them. The grain companies said, well, we want to be a little more measured because we do have elevators on some of these lines and we would have to close those elevators. So we would like there to be a little bit of a buffer. Don't close them right away. Let us sort of adjust. But in time, you know, because these companies had rail elevators other places, you know, if you close this one over here, well, you'd lose a little business over there, but hopefully it would be compensated by an increase in business over there. So overall, they didn't mind so much. Of course, the ones that were most opposed to the abandonment were the people most affected, which, of course, are the townspeople of the various communities who were going to have their railway line lost. And so you look through the records, and there are detailed records of this commission. There was one Manitoban on that commission, a fellow from Brandon by the name of Reg Forbes. And fortunately for us, he deposited all of his files from that commission at the university in Brandon. Wonderful collection. Yeah. Just wonderful.
What did he say?
Well, he preserves all of the little documents that were presented to him at these hearings, you know, and there's some really poignant ones, you know, communities that would hand in a letter saying, you know, you're going to kill our community. Just, you know, heartrending, some of these appeals. And of course, you have to be pragmatic about some of them. You know, yes, unfortunately, some of these are going to have to close. They just cannot pay for themselves. So I thought I'd just give you one example.
Yeah.
The railway line called the Wauwinisa Subdivision. And basically, it was the railway line that went from Brandon to Belmont.
Okay.
It wasn't a very long line. It was only about 40 miles in total length. It was built in 1890. And along the way, there were several communities, the largest of which were the communities of Hilton, Wauwinisa, Rounthwaite, and Hilton. Or, pardon me, I hit Belmont. And well, unfortunately, it was a money-losing line. The railway estimated that any from year to year, it was losing anywhere from $13,000 to $15,000. It wasn't a long line, so you know, you imagine if that's the loss on a short line, you know, a longer line. And they said it would cost between $1 and $5 million.
Which is a lot for back then.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yep.
To upgrade the line. So they said they really wanted to get rid of it. And in the end, that was the decision of the Hull Commission, was to abandon it. So the first portion of the line was abandoned in November of 1975, and as a result of that, the grain elevator in Hilton closed.
Okay.
Well, the community of Hilton today is very little. I mean, there's a few houses and not much else. There's no stores. You know, there's no economic activity, so to speak.
How much of that do you think is to do with this?
I think it's entirely to do with it. I think the loss of that railway line, the loss of the grain elevator, was really the loss of the community,
an entire community.
Yeah. Then the second phase of that abandonment was in December of '83. The Hull Commission recommended that this Wauwinisa subdivision be closed, and so in December of '83, it was closed. And so the immediate aftermath of that was the grain elevator at Wauwinisa was closed. It was old. It was said to be needing a lot of maintenance, and so I think the feeling was it just didn't make sense to do any work on it. But the one at Rounthwaite, there was a relatively new grain elevator at Rounthwaite, and the company said, you know, we've just put an investment in here. We really don't want to lose that investment. So what they did, in fact, was they picked up the elevator and they moved it.
Wow.
Now, this is, of course, not a small undertaking to move a huge thing like a grain elevator, but they did, and they moved it to a place called Nesbitt, which is on a different line, not far away, but it was on a different line.
Please tell me that line stayed in place for
some
time. It
was. That's right. It was part of that grade A, group A. It was the basic network. It was going to be maintained at least until 2000. So everything seemed to be going all right. The town of Hilton disappeared. Wauwinisa is kind of stuck on. In fact, because of the movement of a lot of the troops from Kapyong Barracks here in Winnipeg to the CFB Shiloh, a lot of the people from the base have built homes in Wauwinisa. So actually, Wauwinisa is doing fairly well, despite the loss of its grain elevator. It's still a fairly active community. But unfortunately, the time has, of course, marched on, and that deadline, the 2000 deadline for the, you know, moratorium on further abandonment has passed.
Right.
So in fact, last summer, I was traveling along Highway number 2, and I noticed there was a lot of heavy equipment operating just off the highway along what appeared to be the railway line. And so I, of course, being curious, went down and had a look, and sure enough, they're removing the railway tracks. All the steel was being lifted up. I pulled into the town of Glenboro, which was part of that line, and there was an enormous pile of steel.
Yeah.
You know, it was really a daunting thing to see this huge pile of steel piled there. In fact, I took pictures and posted them online and said, does anybody know what these are? Because actually, from the end, it almost looked like abstract art, seeing these rails from the ends. Well, of course, what that means is that railway line, the one to which the Nesbitt elevator was serviced, was now abandoned. And so that elevator from Rounthwaite, the one that escaped being closed in '83 because of the abandonment of the Wauwinisa line, now it finally succumbed. and we lost that railway and therefore that elevator. So the elevator now in Rounthwaite is still the one from Rounthwaite is now still standing at Nesbitt.
The elevator lives?
It is. It's being used by a farmer locally for his own grain storage. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that line is gone. And so, of course, the communities as a result, Nesbitt, I suspect, is going to suffer the effects of that abandonment.
So they'll still suffer the effects.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's a whole series of effects, too. I mean, it's a lot of things we might think of. Of course, when farmers aren't coming to town to deliver their grain, they're not stopping to buy services. So you lose a lot of economic activity. But it's more than that. You know, the community loses tax revenue because those grain elevators, for example, paid taxes. The companies that operated them paid into the local coffers of the community. Mm. And so, for example, the RM of Oakland estimated that when the Rounthwaite elevator was closed and then moved to Nesbitt, they lost $48,000 a year in tax revenue. And that's not an inconsiderable sum.
Significant, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and of course, on top of that, because now farmers had to take their grain further distances to other elevators because the ones they had traditionally gone to were closed, well, then they had to upgrade roads because now the farmers were taking further to go to the elevator. And of course, once that happens, once the roads are upgraded, people can drive other places. They can go to buy their groceries in bigger communities. They might say, well, I'm going to take my kids to a different school because I can drive them there. Or maybe I'll just up and move, you know, and I don't need to live in a small community anymore because I can go and get all the services I want in a bigger community. So what it's contributed to, I think, is widespread rural depopulation. You know, so you drive around rural Manitoba today and you can pass through all kinds of little towns that were once thriving and today are all but gone simply because, you know, of the opportunities that have been provided by now the loss of the railway lines, which then is the encouragement for improvements in roads. And once you have roads, you can go anywhere you want.
See, this is what I love about abandoned Manitoba, how one concrete pillar can uncover an entire narrative, an entire hidden history.
That's right. And, I didn't know a lot about railway abandonment until I started delving into the history of that pillar. And it's been a really eye-opening experience for me, especially, say, reading through the records of that Hull Commission. Mm. It was really quite a shock to see just how much was lost in that period in the 1970s.
Get to hear some real voices from real people.
Indeed.
Okay, Gordon, what do we have for next weekend?
Well, next week we're going to talk about balloons and cribs.
Ooh, and birthday party?
Well, you think so maybe, but no, they actually continue the theme of grain elevators.
Okay.
We're going to stay in the theme of grain elevators next week and particularly about moving them. But unlike the one we talked about today that was moved in order to preserve it as a grain handling facility, next week we're going to talk about one that's being moved to convert it into an entirely new use.
Interesting. And you're going on a field trip as part of that.
We will.
Okay, exciting. Gordon, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.